Welcome to Behind the Panels Issue 12, the comic book podcast that is now taking applications for kids' sidekicks. I'm one of your hosts, Richard Gray.
And I'm your other host, David McVeigh. How are you, Richard?
I'm fantastic, Dave. We've got a big show this week.
We do.
This week, it's another new logo, or should we say logos for DC?
Multiple
logos. Catwoman tries some porn to corrupt our children. PJ Hogan adapts Bone. Green Arrow's ready to shoot. And the world premiere of Smile. Plus our kick-ass pick of the week, the DC classic, Green Lantern, Green Arrow, Hard Traveling Heroes. But first, here's a trip back to 1973 with a small adventure from the archives.
Okay.
Game Warden Headquarters in Borneco, an SOS message has been received claiming that giant ants are threatening a team of animal photographers in the jungle. Rushing through the jungles of Borneco to the scene of danger, the world's greatest archer, staunch member of the Justice League of America, the Green Arrow.
I hope the Game Warden knows what he's talking about. Giant ants, eh?
Green Arrow, over here! Green Arrow!
By Robin Hood's bow. Where are you?
On the other side of the chasm! Hurry!
Giant ants that can't be seen. Voices talking to me from nowhere. Wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into.
Hurry, Green Arrow!
Where are you?
Down here!
Great flaming arrows.
I wonder what kind of scene I'm getting into.
Great flaming arrows.
You know what, though? That clip is really appropriate for the book that we're doing today.
Yeah. It's about the same time as well. It's about the same vintage. So this is the early 70s. So.
Exactly my point. We'll talk about that more in the pick of the week because, the 70s were an interesting time for dialogue, let me tell you.
You mean dialogue like this?
What in the name of Robin Hood is going on anyway?
Yeah, that would be the one. Oh, dearie me. Now, I'd like to point out that in the introduction there, Richard, you actually said Catwoman, porn, and bone within almost the same sentence of each
and
other.
Smile.
And smile.
And ass. I also said ass.
You did. So I think we need to start clarifying some of these stories. So let's move straight into this.
What a scoop!
All right, tell me about this logo.
Oh my god!
I'm looking at the picture right now, and it's really not pretty.
Look, if you've not seen these pictures, we'll stick these. We'll stick a link to these in the post for the podcast as well, so you can have a look at them.
Yeah.
But DC changed their logo back in 2005 from the old bullet logo to what they called the DC spin.
Right.
And that was basically the letters DC with a big sweeping, great flaming arrow. great flaming star sort of shooting around the side of them.
Which I actually really liked.
Which is quite good. I mean, a lot of people sort of pushed against it at first, but it really has become part of the books. So now, a few years later, and they've decided to change their logos and... Oh my god, they're bad.
It's a really atrocious logo. Now, the story that I heard about this changeover, and I'm only going from secondhand knowledge, but I believe it was majorspoilers.com who was talking about it, was basically saying that DC had forgotten to register the trademark on that logo.
Whoops.
Whoops. And another company
what
came
along. What
should
I say?
Exactly. And apparently another company came along, completely unrelated to comic books, and had a logo that was very similar. And DC basically said, you can't do that. And they said, well, actually, we beat you to the trademark.
That's how it worked in this game.
Yeah, so DC is now apparently trademarked this very quickly.
I wouldn't have been so quick to trademark this one.
Now, what is fascinating about this is that this, according to this picture anyway, there's six different, and I'm sure there's more. So they've actually customized the logo for every hero, is that right?
Well, I don't know if it's for every hero. If you've noticed with the new 52, they've actually divided the world into several different universes. So you've got your Bat books, your Super books, your Justice League books,
right,
and your Dark books. And I think that's the way they've kind of followed the DC and the Green Lantern books. So I think they've sort of followed the logos that way. But basically, for those of you who haven't had a look at the picture yet, as I said, there'll be a link on the sites. But it's just it's a C with a D being peeled off it like a banana.
Now, my question is, I don't understand a couple of them. I understand the Green Lantern one. They got the glowing C and the D. The peeled banana peel is green. Mm. I don't understand the one that has what looks like rope tied around it. It's all black.
Is that the Batman one?
Is that Batman? How does that relate to Batman?
I don't know if that's rope or it's rubber.
I don't know. And there's the other one I don't understand is one that looks like it's got like made out of dry ice.
Yeah, I don't get that one either.
I don't get that. Now, the one that's got us fascinated, you and me, because we kind of discussed this earlier, was the one that looks like Watchmen.
Yeah, well, according to Newsarama, who this is the link that we'll put in our sites as well, is they said that sort of is fueling speculation that there's some as yet to be confirmed Watchmen prequels in the work, which is not the first time we've heard this, but if they've gone the whole hog and actually made a separate Watchmen logo.
Well, you know, I was wondering, maybe it represents graphic novels.
Maybe it does.
They've got a whole bunch of short series at the moment. They've got all these new DCU short series. I wonder if that's for that.
Well, it could be, actually. That's a pretty good explanation. Yeah. I'll give you the official marketing spiel as to why
they've
changed. And excuse me while I put on my official marketing voice while I do this. We didn't want a static logo, but a living identity that could capture the power of our characters and storytelling. In addition to flexibility, the new logo communicates this idea of dual identity. There's more than meets the eye. Sounds like the Transformers.
It does.
You have to take a closer look to understand the richness of our characters and stories. Well, I tend to take a closer look when I actually open the books and
And all I can say to that marketing man is, oh.
Or more appropriately,
oh, good for you. Yes. Look, I think this is a really dumb move, and I think if anything, I would have gone backwards and gone more back to the shield that they used to have. You know, the round shield.
Yeah.
Because that's much more DC. This is over designed for over designed sake.
Absolutely.
I don't understand why they think this is a good idea. It doesn't say DC to me at all.
No, and it also looks like first year Photoshop.
That too. And it's and then you can also think about it and say it actually is kind of lazy. Because
it's very lazy. It's like someone said, look, you've got 24 hours to come up with a new logo, and that's what we've got to run with.
Mm. And whoever approved this was on drugs.
Yeah.
All right, moving right along. Let's talk about porn.
Let's talk about porn. Now, it's something that we love talking about. Now, we've mentioned a few times in the past on this show, and it's certainly been a debate in the comics community, is that since DC relaunched the New 52, it's been a bit of a darker world.
Yeah, very much so.
And, you know, we've talked about books like Detective Comics and Animal Man being very violent.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about Catwoman in particular being very sexually charged, and things like Red Hood and the Outlaws. And in fact, all of the women in the DCU being very sexualized, more so than they had been in previous incarnations. Now, those completely unbiased and liberal-leaning news reporters at Fox News have stumbled upon this story, and they've decided that, yes, in fact, let me get Fox do the talking for me.
Oh, please do.
Today's new comic books would make Archie and Veronica blush.
Sort of like a fictionalized Playboy.
Wondering what sells nowadays?
Sex sells.
Blood, sex, and violence.
A much more R-rated type of comic book.
How to KO these comics before they corrupt your kids. Wednesday on Fox 5 News at 11.
How to KO those comics before they corrupt your children. Now, can I just point out that these books aren't written for children anymore?
Well, I think this is the thing. I'll play a longer clip in a minute. It's actually a 4-minute story, but I edited about a minute of that out of there. And I'll play that in a moment, where they talk a little bit more about their particular bones of contention with Catwoman and some of the other books. And it seems to be largely leveled at Catwoman.
Well, I can kind of understand it. I don't think I've read an issue of Catwoman yet for 5 issues where she hasn't kept her clothes on.
Yeah, exactly. But When you actually watch the full story, and again, the links are in our show notes, the they seem to be working on the assumption that comics are still for kids. And hence that reference at the start, comic, you know, it would make Archie and Veronica blush. Now, okay, two things on that. I'm pretty sure Archie was always trying to get with one or two of the girls.
Or both at the same time.
and the other thing is to fictionalize Playboy.
Yeah. Yeah, because that's such a realistic form of depiction of women, we must say.
Yeah, absolutely.
Have they seen the Lindsay Lohan spread? That is not Lindsay Lohan, all right?
Yeah, no, absolutely not. There's still a few original freckles in there, I think.
So, yeah, look, I think, but this, once again, this is Fox beating things up.
You know, now, I'll play the longer clip now. This only goes for just over a minute, but it's worth listening to.
All right, amazing.
They've also interviewed an expert, which is, seems to be one of the readers they found in the store on the day. So let me just play this. It's hilarious.
Today's comic superheroes would make Archie and Veronica blush. It's the new DC Comics, Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman. Love it or hate it.
They more or less darken the characters up. And today they introduce a lot of more reality into, like, you know, homosexuality, adultery. All that stuff is in the books now today.
Joe Blackwell started reading comics when he was 8, but they didn't look like this. Batman and Catwoman having sex on the rooftop, a drunken Bruce Wayne, or blood-splattered battles with heads whacked off.
You know, it's sort of like a fictionalized Playboy for kids at its worst.
Critics worry the once family-friendly genre has gone too far. Psychologists point out the overexposure to sex and violence for young children can encourage aggression.
I think too many kids would be put in harm's way, or at least at risk.
The female characters are more sexualized. One that has drawn attention is Starfire, shown here in a popular Cartoon Network TV series. And this is the same character in the comic Red Hood and the Outlaws, much more voluptuous and scantily clad.
That it's a misrepresentation of reality. It sends the wrong message.
Yes,
hang on. Let me be that guy for a minute. It's a misrepresentation of reality.
Yeah, look.
I like saying heads whacked off.
If you're whacking off heads, you've got more problems than fictionalized Playboy, let me tell you.
I can also say that's the second time they use the phrase, it would make Archie and Veronica blush.
Now, obviously, they're big fans of Archie and Veronica.
Some copywriter at Fox got a raise this week.
That's because he got his head whacked off. Now, look, the thing is, that because they open the door, let's talk about that. The Starfire example that they use. Now, she's very sexy in the books.
But the thing is, she always was. They toned her down for the cartoon.
Absolutely, and that's exactly the point. DC have a kid's line.
Yes.
They have a kid's line in print. They have a kid's line for television. Their television line is very much the kid's line. Bleeding Cool, who have been doing a lot on this story this week, actually did a little debate. And they're saying there is no more... first of all, they agreed, yes, Catwoman has been way sexier than they you know, would have anticipated, and there isn't an issue that's gone by where she hasn't been in some state of undress. That's okay, we'll agree on that.
Yeah.
But then they went on to say, first of all, you never actually see them having sex. It's either they're about to go up to it, or they're about to claw each other's clothes off.
Last panel, issue one, that's pretty right into it. That's pretty in the middle of it.
That was in the middle of it. Okay, fair enough. But even so, we're not talking Alan Moore's Lost Girls here. We're talking, you know, largely pre and post coital, you know, moments. But that aside, their argument was also you see more in, you know, your average HBO show like Hung or Game of Thrones or.
Yes, but they're not comic books that are corrupting our children, don't you know? Oh, sorry, wait a minute.
But those aren't comic books corrupting our children.
That's true. And like the thing is, you know, by more of a comparison, if you go to the CW, any of the shows like, you know, Gossip Girl or. Anything that have highly, or any reality show that's on E, you know, things that are freely accessible where they talk about and show sexually explicit content quite readily available that any child could go in.
Quite frankly, the depiction of women, I'm actually much more disturbed by the depiction of women in Twilight than I am in a comic book at this point.
Absolutely. And so, look, the thing is, I think priorities people look – I mean, at the end of the day, this is Fox beating up a story that we've already been talking about for a while. And it's kind of one of those things that the internal – comics universe has already sort of said, yeah, look, guys, it's a bit much. And I think we've started to see it toned down a bit.
And look, there are some characters where that high sexual charge works for the character. I think in the case of Catwoman, it actually does work for the character. She's always been a highly sexually charged character. And so I think it actually works well in the book. And I think the fact that they've actually sexually charged up Harley Quinn in Suicide Squad is actually a really interesting move, because you never really saw her as a sexual character. You saw her as Joker's plaything, but not... I mean, she's out there really flaunting it at the moment in Suicide Squad, and to great effect, because she's basically turning all the men against each other. You know what I mean? She's playing the game. And I quite like that. I quite like how they're playing up on that sexual aspect of it. The Starfire thing is actually kind of weird. They've done some very interesting things with the Starfire character at the moment that I don't entirely agree with, because I always used to like Starfire a lot when she was in New Teen Titans. Mm. And I think they may have actually gone a little far with that character. But I was noticing in issue 5 of Red Hood and the Outlaws, they're actually changing her character a little bit. I think even they realize they may have gone too far.
Yeah. No, look, I mean, and you know, it could be in response to these. I mean... they still need the mainstream. At the end of the day, the reason that they rebooted the New 52 was to get new readers. So if they get some bad press, it's not great for anybody.
Mm.
So look, you know, interesting story. You know, a bit of a giggle, but, you know.
Thank you. I've made my day.
Yeah.
I like whacking their, reality. Whacking their heads off. Oh, great stuff. You know, Fox has never managed to not be a source of amusement for me in some way or another.
Absolutely not. Well, speaking of perversions of reality, David, you know what it's time for?
Oh, what time? What time?
Would it be say it's time for something you're about to play.
Would it be time for this? Is that what you're waiting for?
Pretty much. That was so smooth, wasn't it?
That was so smooth. I think at this point we have to play this.
It's really dark in here.
My secret weapon.
We'll get to that story in a minute.
All right.
Okay, from porn to bone. David, do you like a bit of bone?
I do like a bit of bone.
I've never really spent a lot of time with bone.
I spent a lot of time with... No, I won't go there.
Well, PJ Hogan, whose films in no way conjure up the idea of bone.
Oh, I don't know, Peter Pan.
There's Peter Pan. There's he also did My Best Friend's Wedding, Muriel's Wedding, and most recently Confessions of a Shopaholic.
Oh, did he do that?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so Australia's PJ Hogan has been reported, according to The Hollywood Reporter, in fact, to be adapting classic indie comic Bone. Jeff Smith's Bone.
Now, I've never actually read Bone. I have a whole bunch of them here, and people keep telling me how much I have to read this, and it's one of those ones that I really do feel like I have to read. We may have to do this as a pick of the week just to get me off my butt.
I think that's what I mean. I'm sort of in the same boat. I mean, it ran from 91 to 2004.
Yeah, let's do it all. No, I'm joking.
Well, it was apparently it was when Scholastic began putting out trade paperbacks, so it was obviously aimed at a younger market.
It was originally black and white too, wasn't it?
Yeah, and apparently the trade paperback sold a million copies, so it's a big deal.
Hmm.
Look, you know, there's not a lot of information about the series at the moment. I just thought it was really interesting that that's, you know, a name that you wouldn't normally associate with comic book adaptations is taken to it. And so I don't know whether this is going to be animated or if it's going to be CG/animated. The story, for those of the uninitiated, would be that the comic follows three cousins from the Bone family, small, bold, human-like creatures with big noses. The trio were run out of their hometown and find themselves in a mysterious valley where they are separated and hunted by other creatures. Now, according to the story, animal logic is involved.
Oh, this is going to be CG.
So it's going to be CG. These are the people who did the first Happy Feet, of course.
Yeah, and the owl movie, the owls of
Gahool. Yeah, the Legends of Gahool.
Yeah, that Zack Snyder thing.
So Legend of the Guardians, the Owls of Gahool.
That's the one.
Yeah. So you know, we'll interesting. It's sort of a bit different, other than all the Capes movies that we're getting at the moment. So
yeah, look, I'm always in for a new CG animated film, and if Bone is half as good as they tell me it is, it could actually make a really good film.
Yeah, I hope so.
Now, I do believe they re-released Bone not so long ago as a color edition, but it is actually meant to be red and black and white. So it'd be interesting to see what they do with the film. I'd like to say, you know, that a daring move would be to make a CG black and white film.
That would be a very daring move. To see that.
That would be awesome.
I doubt
it'll ever happen, but it would be awesome because people might actually say,
"It's really dark in here."
The director was going for something very particular then, and I think I delivered.
Yeah, I think you did. Yeah. We'll come back to that. Now, onto something that's very close to your heart.
Very close to my heart. It's some news that we spoke about last week, and when I heard it, my first reaction was...
Hi, Robin Hood's bow.
And
sorry, play that again. You broke up a bit. I want to hear that again.
My Robin Hood's bow.
Oh, awesome.
Also...
great flaming arrows.
I will never get tired of my soundboard.
No, I don't think you will.
The story is basically that Green Arrow is being adapted into a television series, which again, it's another bit of appropriate news for this week's featured pick.
Now we actually talked about this last week.
We did, but last week, CW were ready to order a pilot. This week, they haven't announced that they are ordering it with a bunch of other pilots for their next season. Of course, it's Inauspicious Company was the Carrie Diaries, which is the Sex and the City prequel. And
oh,
a new
God.
Version of Beauty and the Beast.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so I'm hoping it'll be the lead contender of the three.
So what we really want is we want the pilot to be successful enough that next year on television we actually get Arrow and Jessica Jones.
Yeah, and it's going to be exactly right. It's actually going to be called Arrow, the dropping the green, because I think Green Hornet and Green Lantern have turned people off all things green.
Very possibly.
And apparently the other news story is that they're saying it's going to be, it's obviously based on the comic because it's a Green Arrow story, but they're saying it's not going to be based on the comic, I think in the sense that it's not going to be based on any of the existing stories.
No, I've also heard that the last thing I read about it as well is saying they were actually going to do a fresh origin.
Yeah, I've heard this too, and I've heard that it's going to be a modern retelling of Green Arrow, which is still, you know, I think that's okay. I think if you're going to do this sort of thing, kind of like what they did with Smallville, you know, obviously they had to keep elements in there, but then they ended up just doing their own thing for the rest of the run.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that's what you got to do, because I mean, you know, Smallville ran for 10 years. I mean, obviously it was doing something right. So it's not the same creators behind this. I think we've already mentioned that it's people like Greg Berlanti and
Mark Guggenheim,
yeah, and Andrew Kreisberg. Who were involved in this, and Kreisberg has also previously written on the Green Arrow book. So he's familiar with the character. So, look, you know, we're not sort of going too far out of this. I think, you know, again, it's not, you know, much information out there. It's interesting that they've taken this route. There's been a couple of bits of commentary I've read on this week where they're saying, well, look, you know, it could be a good thing that they're taking this route. On one hand, what's wrong with a Green Arrow story? That could actually make a really good television series. Why aren't they doing that? And on the other hand, they're sort of saying, well, again, maybe it is good to have to take a break and carve out its own niche so you don't upset the fanboys because you are very distinctly doing your own thing. But also you might get more people into the character and create its own thing as well. I think it's really interesting that they've even chosen Arrow out of all their pantheon of characters.
I think it's a really interesting choice. I think, was it that he was cheap or that they actually saw something in here that they could...
It could just be Smallville, even though they're sort of just separating themselves from Smallville. He was a really well received character when they put him on there. So, and he ran for 4 years in that show. And even though this is a distinct thing, he's already been tested, so he's kind of known to audiences already.
Yeah, that's true.
Or maybe it is that they want someone who's not known to mainstream audiences, so they can start a fresh slate. I mean, when you're doing Batman or Superman, it's, you know, obviously that comes with certain expectations.
Something very dynamic about archery and stuff on television as well. So this could be a kind of interesting to have a look at.
And or maybe it's they think that Hawkeye from The Avengers is going to be the bee's knees after The Avengers next
year. Yeah, Jeremy Renner may have started something.
Yeah, so Archer's on film. That's what we want.
Fair enough. All right. Now, we haven't done it for the last 2 weeks, and so I thought I'd just throw this in here as a little bit of a hook term for you, because just before we move into our pick of the week, what else have you been reading this week, Richard?
Oh, look, I've been reading heaps of stuff. I've been reading pretty much – well, I started reading a lot of Marvel stuff this week. Which I hadn't been reading. I've been, you know, been really occupied with the New 52, obviously, for quite some time. On Cam's recommendation, you and I both picked up Avenging Spider-Man. And,
which I liked a lot.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. It's got a great sense of humor to it.
And I love General Ross as Red Hulk. I think he's fantastic.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with the whole Red Hulk thing, but I'm loving the dynamic between the two of them. And by the time you get to the third issue, where Red Hulk is out of action for a fair bit of it, but he sort of picks up with him and J. Jonah Jameson having this sort of two-hander. It's got the same sort of dynamic, which is basically two people who don't particularly like each other, but they have to work with each other.
Yeah, yeah.
Spidey cracking wise and some really great stuff. It's old school Spider-Man, but it feels very fresh at the same time,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, no, I agree. I liked it a lot. I'm very curious to see where Avenging Spider-Man goes, because there is a lot of other hero action in it. The Avengers are in part of it, and as we say, it's actually a team-up comic with Red Hulk, which is I just find fascinating, because it's Red Hulk is all the power of Hulk, but with still intelligence.
Yeah,
and a military mind, because he's a general.
Which is a very dangerous thing.
Yeah, I love the fact that Spider-Man keeps saying, it's a truce. You like truces, remember? You're in the military.
There's some great dialogue in it, and I think that's what I love about it the most. It's the poking fun at themselves, and this seems to be true of all the new Marvel stuff. And we're going to cover a few of these next week, but it's kind of like a stealth reboot has happened in the Marvel universe. Not a major thing like the DC New 52, but recently it's Avenging Spider-Man, Daredevil, Punisher, and a few other titles. Have all had new number ones and sort of gone off in their own thing. And I think with that freedom, they've managed to do what some of the new 52 titles haven't done, which is actually create a classic character that we already know, but their own spin on it. And I think Daredevil is a great example of that.
Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit more about Daredevil in the coming weeks, and that's very interesting. And I also like the fact that they didn't reboot their entire universe. They still have Amazing Spider-Man running. They still have another Captain America book as well, which is, I think, up to, you know, it's into its however many issues it's been running now. But then they've got these new ones that have just started on the side.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I like that. And I like the fact that they can go, and if you don't feel like reading the slightly weirder, darker Amazing Spider-Man, you can go, let's read Avenging Spider-Man. It's a bit of fun.
Yeah, and I think Avenging Spider-Man's my book.
Yeah, I think so.
I really like that. And as I said, Daredevil is excellent. Mark Waid is writing that one. And Mark Waid is someone I've been familiar with since back. I don't know if you remember any of the cross-gen stuff.
No.
Do you remember? There was it was meant to be a creator-owned company called cross-gen.
It's like Icon as well.
It was. And when CrossGen was out, they ran between 98 and 2004, and unfortunately they went under, but not before releasing some really, really, really good books. And they actually were starting to build up a really good universe, including one that was written by Mark Waid. And the book was called, if I can remember the name of it, it was very – the name's escaped me for the moment, but it was a it was Ruse. Ruse was the name of the book, and it was very much like a Sherlock Holmes book.
Oh, okay.
And it just had this sort of genius investigator behind it. And it was just a really clever book. I've really loved his writing ever since then. And to see him on Daredevil, a book that, as you know, if you listen to last week's episode, it's had some terrific writers on it over the years, including Frank Miller and Brian Michael Bendis and Ed Brubaker.
And Kevin Smith.
And Kevin Smith. And yeah. This week's featured writer, Dennis O'Neill. You know, all these people have featured on the book over the year. And him to come to this book so late in the piece and still make it feel so fresh is an amazing thing. So I've been enjoying actually dipping my toes back into the Marvel U. Including I've also read Ghost Rider, which I'm not enjoying as much.
I'm curious to see where they're going to take it. I've also managed to get my hands on some vintage Ghost Rider, which I'm going to have a look at as well. I used to like Ghost Rider. When I was actually in my teens, I was a big Ghost Rider reader in the 80s, early 80s. And I haven't picked up a Ghost Rider book in a long time. And going back and look at some of the vintage ones, you start going, hey, these are pretty cool again. You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm not entirely sure about the reboot on that. The other one I'm really curious to read, which I haven't read yet, is the rebooted Punisher.
Right.
Which is also running right now as well. And as we talked about, I think, last week when we said there's actually going to be a convergence, a crossover episode or set of issues, which is Punisher, the new Daredevil, and Avenging Spider-Man.
That's right.
So it's going to be very interesting to see all those three converge. And see what they do with them. Anyway, I was curious because we haven't actually talked about the other stuff. We've just been going plowing through our reading assignments, but we haven't really talked about other stuff. I just thought I'd just give a quick update. I've been reading the latest in the New 52s again, and as well as Marvel. I've been reading a lot lately.
There's one I forgot to mention. I think you're about to talk about it, but some of these issue fives are amazing.
Yeah, well, I was about to say, I just read issue 5 of Suicide Squad. And which I really liked. They're taking Suicide Squad was starting to feel a bit repetitive. It was like, we have another mission, go out and do it. They go out and kill lots of things, and then the explosives aren't taken out of their heads, but they're sent off on another mission. That's
basically, so many books like that at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. And that was basically it. And then suddenly in issue 4, all hell broke loose, basically, because Harley Quinn, who they have turned into such a compelling character, has literally kind of gone, nah, stuff this, I don't want to play anymore, and has taken off on them, unleashing an entire prison of very, very, very dangerous prisoners. To cover her tracks. And that's what the entire issue 5 is about, is the fact that they're all fighting for their lives because the entire prison is loose and she's nowhere to be found. Because she's gone off to find Puddin', you know? she's heard, and it's interesting because we've actually now got a timeline as well, because she has heard about the fact that Joker might be dead.
Right.
Which is from Detective Comics.
That's right.
You know? And so she's gone running off to go basically find Puddin'. That's what she's gone to do. So I found Suicide Squad really compelling this week. I also found this week's Red Hood and the Outlaws really interesting.
I'm not caught up on that one yet.
Have a look at that, because once again, as I say, Starfire is a slightly different character. They've kind of played with her a little bit. That sounded terrible. I didn't mean it to come out like that.
You're corrupting our children, Dave.
I know. I can't help myself. So yeah, there's some really interesting stuff happening in the DCU at the moment. So
did you read Action Comics number 5 yet?
No, did I?
Oh, hold on. You have to read this book.
Hold on. What happened in number 5? Give me a second.
Speaking of timelines, we finally get it opens with a new origin story for Superman.
Oh, no, I did read this. Yes, I did read this. Yes.
And it ends with possibly one of the biggest twists so far in the New 52.
Yes, and let's not spoil anything on that, because it is very, very, very good. And
let's just say that we think that some of the distinct timelines that are happening will be converging soon.
Yeah, and there's also more on the whole origin stuff on the Kryptonian side of business in the new Supergirl.
Right, I haven't caught up with Supergirl.
So have a look at that too, because we get into it. I won't spoil it. All I'll say is we get into territory about the World Killers.
Right,
and this Krypton may not have been what we think it is.
Interesting.
So no, they're going some very interesting territory in the super books, and I love the fact that Kara still doesn't speak English.
That's
so 5 issues in, she's still speaking Kryptonian and has no idea what anybody is saying to her.
One other book I just want to quickly highlight, because you mentioned it to me before the show, is Batman number 5.
I am Batman number 5. Yeah.
Yeah, that was just an outstanding issue in every way.
I think we've said this before, though. Out of all of the Batman books, Batman is by far the best book.
Scott Snyder is doing amazing things on that book.
Because it is, truly, he is a detective.
He is.
And he's trying to work through a very, very long conspiracy throughout Gotham's history, and it's led to a very, very interesting psychological issue.
I would say now, having read a few from both DC and Marvel at the moment, that if I was going to recommend one traditional book from both series, I would pick up Daredevil from Marvel and Batman from the DCU if you really like that kind of gritty crime detective sort of stuff.
Yeah, good call. I think, and it's interesting you say that, because I think you said last week Daredevil is the Batman of the Marvel U.
I think so. Yeah,
and I think that's a fantastic call.
Yeah. I mean, it's not. I mean, it's obvious and it's not obvious in some ways, because, you know, Daredevil has got superpowers, but he is a detective and he's a lawyer. You know, he is fighting for justice on both sides of the fence. And I'm really liking what they're doing with the Bat books, actually, because we've got all these different Bat books, but all that stuff about Bruce Wayne sort of reforming Gotham from the money side of things is actually influencing every Bat book.
Yes, yes.
And including, you know, Birds of Prey, and including Catwoman when she's not doing porn, and doing including, you know, every it touches on everything at once, and you know, you get little nuggets of information. And I think, you know, it is one of the things that I complain that there's too many Bat books, but they are actually informing each other. So I think that's actually they're doing an amazing job
without
necessitating that you buy every one of them.
With the exception of two, I'm not real keen on Batwoman. And not real keen on Batwing.
Okay, I like Batwoman. I just don't. Yeah, I don't think it's informing the others as much. Batwing, no. Like, five issues in, I'm not quite sure I'm going to read issue six.
I haven't read the last two issues, quite frankly.
I really wanted to give it a go, because I kind of liked the idea. And maybe when Grant Morrison starts writing Batman Incorporated again. From April, or when they start launching the issue eights.
Yep.
And that'll be one of the new books that comes in when they drop six and bring six in. Maybe when he starts writing that, it'll bring that universe a bit more into ours. But I'm finding it, frankly, ridiculous, because there was an issue, might have been issue five, where Bruce Wayne traveled off to Batwing's neck of the woods.
Into Africa, somewhere in Africa.
Yeah, Africa. Actually, I think they were visiting Egypt in this particular issue.
Right.
And it sort of got a little bit preposterous, because they referenced some of the stuff that Bruce Wayne was doing. So it's clearly in the same continuity as the other Bat books. Which means he's currently remodeling Gotham City as Bruce Wayne in four different books. He's going off on all these different adventures, but still finds the time to travel off and mentor his African protege.
Well, I was about to say, you mentioned three books there, but don't forget he's also a member of Justice League and Justice League International.
It's national, that's true. Yeah,
he's everywhere. I don't know how Bruce Wayne finds time to sleep.
He's managed to bend space-time.
All right, we have one last thing we're going to talk about in film.
Yes.
And then we're going to move on to our pick of the week. So we actually have Nicholas here. He's been with us almost every issue, actually, as our little audience here. You can hear him chuckle in the background sometimes. I am going to put him on mic, actually, just because it is his, and so we should talk to him about it a little bit. But we've been talking about on this show Smile, which is his Lego animated Batman fan film, which actually launched last night, finally. And I got to say, it kind of blew us all away a little bit. I'm going to play a little clip from Smile here, Richard, and we can have a listen to this. Here we go.
What's the situation, Jim?
There have been a lot of unexplained murders in Gotham lately. They all seem to be smiling. Gives me the creeps. Just this morning, the deputy mayor was murdered, the same way as all these other people. The mayor wants the person behind this locked up for a really long time.
I'm on it, Jim.
Oh, and Batman. I hate it when he does that.
I do too. Nicholas, how are you?
I'm good, thank you very much.
Congratulations.
I'm also congratulating myself, actually.
Yes, you should congratulate. Look, after, what is it, 6 months' work,
yeah.
You finally launched this onto YouTube, which you can actually find it at geekactually.com. You can find it at therealbits.com. You can find it at Nikki's channel, youtube.com/Nikki McVeigh. You'll find it all over the place at the moment. It is really good. And can I point out, just from that clip alone, the music is amazing.
It really is.
Richard, what did you think of it?
Oh, look, I was amazing. Look, I think the role of the mayor was brilliant. Honestly, Nikki, I think the everything about it, I saw, you know, bits and pieces of this coming together, and I've seen your other stuff as well, but finally, sending this all together, my girlfriend Susan and I sat here and watched the whole thing together, and we were just amazed at how well it came together. The lighting's fantastic. The effects are brilliant. You did the effects as well, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I did all the effects.
The effects are amazing, and that soundtrack as well is just blew me away. And I love the story as well. It's classic Batman.
We should give credit to the musician, because Andrew Gerlicher is the composer, who's one of your contacts. Just met him through YouTube, yeah? This is a talent and a half. I'll be curious to see where he goes in his careers, because it's amazing. I also have one more scene here. You were talking about that mayor's performance. Amazing performance. I think we should hear that right now. Here we go.
Hey, Michael, I received the file she gave me. They're pretty good. Well, he's probably gone home already. Oh, well, work to do. That's weird. Power must be out. It's really dark in here.
It's really dark in here.
Susan said she didn't recognize who that voice was. It's
okay, because I actually do a lot of voices in it, as you know. And I do one voice which my mother didn't even recognize. She goes, who's the guy at the police station who does the phone call? You know, this one.
Hello, police department.
I said, that's me. So, look, it is a lot of fun. You'll hear a lot of familiar voices in there. If you've ever listened to Film Actually, you'll hear Josh in there as well. Yeah. You'll hear my sister in there if you've ever listened to Geek Actually. She's been on there. Yeah. Richard, me, a lot of your friends from YouTube. Yeah. I just wanted to bring you on just to say congratulations, because it is a really, really good film. And I had a lot of fun watching it. And I had a lot of fun helping you put things together, too. So,
thanks so much.
And I'll just add this.
Yeah.
That was my contribution.
There you go. You were going to say?
Thank you so much, everyone. Thanks so much, everyone, for, like, you know, supporting me through this project.
No problem at all.
Like, you know, not getting impatient with me just because it's taking so long.
Well, you know, quality takes time.
Yeah. And it paid off, man. It's fantastic.
Thanks.
All right, and speaking of quality...
It's really dark in here.
No, that's not what I meant at all. Speaking of quality, we need to move on to this.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
Okay, Richard, this is your book. You lead us off.
Well, first of all, this week it's...
Calling Green Arrow! Calling Green Arrow! Come in, Green Arrow!
Again, Gulliver's gigantic gift is the gift that keeps on giving. This week's featured book, I have mentioned many, many, many times. Sounding like Commandant Lassard from the Police Academy.
Look at that. Johnson's as far as the eye can see.
That's for another week. We'll do our five favorite Commandant Lassard moments in film, actually.
Absolutely.
So this week we decided to, because I'm a huge Green Arrow fan, and so I wanted to, we did a classic Marvel book last week, so we did a classic DC book this week, so this is the classic Green Lantern, Green Arrow team-up, Green Lantern, Green Arrow, Hard Traveling Heroes, as it's commonly known, and the original run was issues 76 to 89 of the old, of the second volume, I guess, of the Green Lantern books. Now, just to put this in a bit of historical context, Green Arrow was created in 1941, but didn't receive his name in the title of a book until this one in 1976.
Wow.
Sorry, not 1976, whenever this came out, early 1970s. And so this is, it's almost been 30 years. And he didn't, in fact, after this run finished, he didn't receive his name in the title of a book until a miniseries in 1983. And then it was another 5 years after that before Mike Grell launched his ongoing series. So it wasn't until 1988 that Green Arrow finally got an ongoing series after 47 years in the business.
That's amazing, because he's always been around.
He has, and he's become more recently a bit of a linchpin of the DCU. And this book, in many ways, is why. And the reason this is such a seminal book. Now, I suspect It doesn't read as well today, and I suspect some of the issues that we spoke about last week will come up this week in terms of the way our expectations on writing have changed. But Green Arrow had previously been created, when he was created in the early 40s, he was a Batman clone.
Right.
There was no secret about it. He had an Arrow car. He had an Arrow plane. He had an Arrow cave. He had a kid sidekick named Speedy. He had a whole series of trick arrows, which were basically his utility belt. He was, you know, he's a laughable figure now. But it was in the late 1960s, in a couple of seminal books, there was a one in the late run of around that time in Justice League. There was an issue where he actually stood against the rest of the Justice League and said, "Hang on, guys. You all want to fly off into space, and you're saying that this character down here who's saying he needs our help on the streets isn't worth your attention. I think we should go and check that out." So Green Arrow actually leads a small group of people off to check out these people who are having trouble on the streets because the Justice League was too big for it.
Mm.
And then there was another issue called an old series called The Brave and the Bold, which was a team-up book. And between that, Green Arrow got his new look costume, which is the one that you see in the book here. So he'd actually, and he's grown a beard and he's got a costume and stuff as well.
He's got that feather in his hat.
And his hat, yeah, exactly. So basically the Green Arrow as we know him today, or except in the new 52 where he looks a lot different, the Green Arrow look that pretty much stayed for another 40 years after that came from these books.
Right.
And the attitude that he had came from these books.
Oh yeah, the tree-hugging hippie.
Yeah, and he was. And the DCU, believe it or not, this was a time when obviously there were huge social changes happening in America, and comic books needed to reflect that.
Hmm.
And DC were actually pioneers in this sense. I mean, Marvel were doing some amazing things as well before that, and certainly a decade before that with books like The X-Men, of course, which was a secondhand book for any civil rights movement.
Yeah, exactly. It was all about minorities, in fact.
Minorities,
yeah.
Exactly. But the revolutionary thing about Green Lantern Green Arrow is a book that in the first issue directly addresses the problems of America. It starts with Green Lantern looking for Green Arrow, saying, you know, I haven't seen the guy for a long time. He sees some trouble happening down on the streets, someone being attacked, so Green Lantern goes to protect him. And then suddenly Green Lantern's being pummeled by all sides by the people in the neighborhood saying, "You're just protecting a crook." Now, it transpires that the guy was actually a shady landlord and he was trying to shake some money out of one of his tenants who he was trying to rip off. And Green Arrow takes the opportunity to say, "Look, dude, just because you fly around the galaxy doesn't mean that there isn't stuff going on down here. And just because it's legal, it doesn't mean that it's not criminal."
Now, I love the fact that he actually says that several times throughout the book. When he says, "Just because it's legal doesn't mean it's right," as well.
Exactly
as,
right. Know. Which is the kind of the philosophy of this book, and one of the most reprinted pages in comic books history ever. Is a panel where it's got an African-American character, and I mentioned this last week.
Mm.
He actually says, "You know, you fly around the galaxy, Green Lantern. I hear what you did for the purple skins and the blue skins and all these people. What have you done for the black skins lately?" You know, and Green Lantern's got nothing to say to that.
Well,
he just hangs his head.
"I can't."
I can't say it, you know. And which is where, you know, after being called over the coals from the Guardians on Oa, Arrow wishes them a challenge and says, "No, why don't one of you live amongst us for a while and maybe you'll understand what it's like to feel and what it's like to hurt and what it's like to have to deal with everyday life." And contextually, we should also point out this is a point where Green Arrow has lost his fortune. He was a billionaire playboy again.
I was going to ask you about that because he doesn't seem to be rich in this.
No, and this is not long after he's lost his fortune, which was a defining character moment for Green Arrow because one, it separated him from Batman. Two, it gave him this impetus to actually become the voice for the average man. Now, one could say he's not exactly led an average man life up until that point, but he does things. In this article I was reading this week, Green Arrow is always a tough character to define, and this is why it's interesting. This could be why they're taking a whole new tack with him for the TV show, because he's been everything. He's been he's been rich. He's been poor. He's been a reporter. He ran for mayor. He was mayor short briefly in one run. You know, he's His superhero identity was outed. He was a criminal. He was and in Mike Grell's run, he even kills.
Hmm.
Now, and which is something that he has to deal with over the course of 80 odd issues after that. Now, he is not your typical clean cut hero. And this is what makes this series so fascinating. Now, even though I think the writing is somewhat dated, and I've read this pretty much once a year, every year, and I read most of it again for this show. And yes, the writing is antiquated, but I think it's still snappier than that Daredevil book.
I will agree there. The problem I had with the writing overall were like when we get further into the book and they're on like the Indian reservations and stuff like that. The problem I had was that what they're saying is good, because what they're trying to say is these are the problems we face and we should be facing our problems. The problem is that the way that the writing is, it almost feels racist against the Indians just in the way it's worded.
Look, and there is, but I think it's there's a point you get to where you become so heavy-handedly conscious about being liberal, small L liberal, that you start to overcompensate, and you're right, it does come off as a little bit racist. But then again, attitudes have changed in that regard as well. What was considered to be very much affirmative action in the 70s is now considered antiquated and a little bit racist as well.
Yeah, I will say that the one thing that this book has straight off the bat when you start to read it is a time capsule of 1972-73. And the way that they talk to each other, the way that they resolve situations, you can realize the way they treat Black Canary. I mean, the way Black Canary is written is almost laughable. Yeah. You know, it's like, because she's just a dame. You know what I mean? How you going, bird lady? You know, all the way there. It's the way that Green Arrow relates to her, which I find really funny. And then,
I was going to say, it's interesting because it was by the time they actually got up to the 80s when she becomes a major character in the ongoing book.
Yeah.
It's after her being abducted and. Well, there was implied rape, but it was never actually said that she was raped. She was just beaten physically and demeaned, I think, is what actually happened. And she lost her canary cry as a result of it. By the time you get up to that stage in the timeline, and we're talking another 15 years after this book, she starts to become Oliver Queen's equal.
Right.
So much so that eventually DC gave them Green Arrow, Black Canary as a equal billing in the title. Mm. But you're right. Back in these things, she is just a dame. You're right.
She's window dressing.
She is window dressing. Yeah. But look, you know, times do change. I think the book does a lot. It does a lot for progressing the idea of superheroes. One of the things, and they may have mentioned this in that TV series Inc. that we keep talking about.
Mm.
That it's a book that doesn't have all the answers and sometimes gets it wrong. But what they're saying is, if superheroes were to operate in the real world, that would be the case.
Mm.
They wouldn't have all the answers, and they sometimes get things wrong. And you know what? Superheroes can't solve all the problems. They can't solve global poverty, and they can't solve race relations. They can't make people feel a certain way.
So they can offer
examples, but that's all they can do.
Absolutely. And to let people know what the arc of this book is, basically, with the humanized guardian in tow, they hop into basically a pickup truck and takes drive across America. The idea is to try and rediscover what makes America great and what they're supposed to be protecting, not just being superheroes. And I like the fact that they've limited Green Lantern. The Owen Guardians have basically taken away, they've like half-strengthed his ring because it's almost like he's on a leave of absence.
Yeah.
And so they've taken away his force field, so he is vulnerable, and his ring only has about half power to it. I like the fact that they don't always have, as you're right, they don't always have the right answers. And I love the fact they just keep seemingly running into problems.
And I think that they're very flawed characters as well. I mean, this one of the problems that they run into ultimately is in one of the most famous comic book covers ever, which was My Ward Speedy is a Junkie. this is the run ultimately where Speedy becomes addicted to heroin.
Right.
This is where this whole arc ends up leading. That's one of the major points towards the end of that. And this arc does go on for quite some time. This ran, and then eventually when the book actually went into hiatus for a few years and they came back and it was more of a spacefaring adventure kind of thing after that. But before that, Speedy became a junkie. And this is one of the major, and this is something that still has ramifications in the modern DCU.
Yep.
And it was really bold. It was on the cover of the book. It was like Speedy prepping up for to shoot.
Now, this was actually the issue that the Comic Book Association had troubles with.
Yeah, they had massive troubles with this because it was an anti-drug issue.
And it was actually requested at the request of the U.S.
Yeah,
government.
Yeah, because there was a whole lot of requests going on at that time that comics do something about the drug problem and speak to kids directly. So they wrote this book. And what I find so interesting about Green Arrow's character in this as well is that he walks in, like the cover is, "My ward Speedy, it's a junkie," which is a really provocative cover. but then they walk in and then it's like the first issue back, the first panel, after he finds out that he's a junkie, he's hitting Speedy across the face, saying, smacking him about. His first reaction is to hit him and get angry.
But I noticed that
he's not, he can't be, when it comes to something personal, he's not the heroic person. He is an angry father figure.
Yeah, well, and he does that several times. And this is another case of that where he pretends to be the ghost on the Indian reservation.
That's right.
And when Green Lantern turns up and says, "You can't do this," because he's inciting riot, basically. Basically saying, "You should all stand up, and I'm the ghost, and I'm here to tell you, stand up against the man," basically. Green Lantern turns up and he says, "See, and you can't even touch me because I made my costume yellow, so your ring won't touch me." And so Green Lantern belts him, and the two of them fall into a river fist fighting.
It's a very manly book.
It's very manly. A lot of testosterone in this book.
And if you notice the way it's drawn, the fabulous art, I've got to say, I really love the look of this book. And this is kind of, it shows you actually how far comics came between, 5 years earlier when they were very, very simple line drawings almost, mm-hmm. The Neil Adams stuff, and this is around the same time as we've spoken, John Romita and all those sort of people are coming up. This Neil Adams book, he really really amps up the human form, gives it that kind of hyper realistic look, as I said last week, where it's kind of like the human form taken to its peak of physical condition. And you'll see all these great scenes where it's kind of like, big fist coming over and punching someone on the jaw, or Green Arrow straining to pull back an arrow in its quiver, and things like that. It's really just the way they do things with a panel. And I really like those panels when it's kind of like they're saying something kind of inspiring, and there'll be like just a sketch, like a ghost of Martin Luther in the background.
Yes, I noticed that.
Things like that, but it's all throughout the book. They'll overlay faces over pages and things like that. I really like that about this book. And look, biased, but
it is the definitive Green Lantern. It's the definitive Green Arrow in style and look, and everything is dictated by these books. Even Canary, although her face is different, her costume is correct. But I noticed the fact that her face, actually, they make her look like one of those classic, pop art you see around today where it's got like, "Oh, my God, I left a baby on the bus."
They do that sort of Lichtenstein stuff. No,
that's the word I'm looking for. Thank you. Yes.
Yeah. It's funny because it's also at this point, I think she was still wearing the wig. She was Black Canary for the longest time, wore a blonde wig over her hair, and then eventually she's dyed it now, we find out.
Right.
I do like the way it's drawn. It is, as you said, it's a very classic look, and I think that's what I like about this book so much. It is kind of like the peak of where they're at. It's funny because I think in the Quiver storyline, which is Kevin Smith's storyline, when Green Arrow comes back from the dead, he's resurrected with no memory of anything that's transpired pretty much since just after this. And so he refers to that as his golden era, basically. He was resurrected at a time when he was at the height of his strength and the height of his voice. And so when he's first resurrected, he's an argumentative son of a bitch, which is what he is here. And obviously that's been tempered a lot over the years, and he's become just a fighter for the good cause. But I think it is almost a caricature. I mean, he is meant to be the outspoken liberal character of the DCU. And he's got such a loud voice that they didn't really have a lot of other outspoken liberal characters.
He's such
a
hip cat.
Yeah, absolutely. Right down to the goatee, you know. It's just he, contrasting that, you had the almost fascist character, you know, he always came to blows with people like Hawkman. You know, that was always an ongoing thing. You know, they always had these constant arguments in the Justice League headquarters. That was always a running joke.
Well, even in the Justice League cartoon, he's always fighting with Superman and Batman and everybody else because they want to do the grander things. And he's like, what about the little people?
Exactly. And, you know, that's what they needed. And I think that is what this book is. This book is basically, what about the little people? And, you know, it might be dated. But I think it holds up a lot better because, let's face it, some of those issues haven't gone away.
Yeah, that's true. I do find that they repeat themselves a few times in this.
I did actually find that. Now, it's funny you should say that, because as I was reading this through, I thought, didn't I already read this? Was that in the last issue?
Well, there's actually one in particular, which is about three or four times in the book, actually, when Hal Jordan is giving the oath and charging his ring, and there's a thought bubble above him basically saying, these words used to mean something to me, but now I'm not so sure, and blah, blah, blah. And he goes with this whole, like, crisis of conscience about how he's not sure if he really does believe in all of this anymore because of all the things he said. And that happens repeatedly. Every time he charges his ring, and you go, we get the idea. You're having a crisis of conscience, you know?
I've thought about that, David, and I think you do get that a lot in the older comics because these really were – it was a long time between drinks for each of these books. At the moment, we read – lots of comics all the time, and we get them digitally available to us, and we also consume things in trade paperback form now. We're actually reading it at the time. The idea of these things being available as a collection was unheard of. They didn't collect comics in those days. You were only reading them in single issues a month apart, so to repeat certain story elements was necessary, and you'll find that in a lot of the comics from that era, where they were starting to get into long form stories. They weren't just single issues, but they were stories that were going over story arcs, I guess, that were going over several issues. But they weren't quite up to the graphic novel stage yet.
Yeah.
So we're kind of in that in between, and this is before direct marketing of comics to people as well.
Yeah,
direct
marketing to comics. This was early 80s, isn't it?
Direct marketing, yeah.
Yeah, so this was like the heyday of the comics industry. This is when it all changed. And it was no longer just something on a newsagent shelf. It was now something that you were getting specialist comic book shops happening everywhere. This was all becoming this very, very, very it was becoming an industry.
Yeah,
rather than just being the funny pages.
Absolutely. And I think that's kind of like the story that we spoke about at the top of the show. About, you know, comics corrupting children still very much comes from this idea that comics are still for kids from those old days. Before, you know, the reason, you know, having direct marketing to readers meant that you could actually publish books that, you know, that didn't have to sit on news agency or newsstands, you know, that could be seen by a select audience if you wanted them to.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is, I think we have to, when we're reading a book like this, and, you know, obviously I'm biased and I will defend this book, but I think we have to put all of these classic picks into context in that, you know, you wouldn't have been reading them in the format that we read them in. We wouldn't have been reading the whole run in a week.
That's true. I guess I should be. Look, I can also say, though, with all honesty, I remember this book from the 70s. I remember this book from when I was a kid, and I remember loving this book as a kid. This was actually one of my favorite comics back then. I remember the Green Lantern, Green Arrow comics quite well. So within context of its time and place, it was actually an amazing book.
I mean, as a kid, what's not to like about it? There's a fist fight every 5 minutes.
Yeah, and it's two great characters. I've actually just walked up, I've just opened up an issue, and I've opened up straight to him belting Green Arrow as the dressed in the yellow ghost costume in the river. The elemental struggle between two men, each fired by a belief in justice, both unable to understand the reason for their terrible need to hit.
Oh my. That's good.
I
love these books, you know, if you do, I mean, I've got this beautiful absolute hardcover edition of this, which really does sort of emphasize the art aspect to it. It's been republished so many times. I believe it's getting another reprint later this year as another hardcover edition.
Wow.
So if people, they've released it a few times in trade paperbacks, but I think it'll be great when they bring it out in these omnibus editions. DC and Marvel are both doing excellent work on their collected editions at the moment. I've got to really tip my hat to both studios for really, really, really bringing their A game to their archival material.
Well, it's really good because some of this stuff we consider to be lost. You know what I mean? Absolutely. It's like once it's come and gone, it's gone. And to do full color reprints, I mean, Marvel was doing reprints, their Essential series where they were reprinting whole runs of comic books in paperback form, but they were only printed in black and white.
And they've started doing like these omnibus editions now, which are in color.
That's what we want. We want them to be the whole comics as we remember them.
Yep, absolutely. You know? Now, can I just say, speaking of as we remember them, I will confess, with this particular run of Green Lantern, Green Arrow, I have them in the original issues, so the original 1970s issues.
Right.
Then I also have them in the 1983 reprint, when they reprinted the whole run as seven collected omnibus editions.
That's what I've been reading.
Yeah, and then I've also got them in trade paperbacks, and I've got them in a hardcover edition. And I've got a special re-release issue of the first issue of this run as well.
I'm starting to wonder if your love for Green Arrow is not quite normal.
Yeah, look, I'm a bit of a collector, but it is interesting to that this particular story has endured for DC. It is kind
really
of
dark in here.
referring to your mind.
Probably not. Well.
What in the name of Robin Hood is going on anyway?
As you said last week, we've all got our favorites.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
But for me, this depiction of it is why this is one of my favorites. You know, and I love the character in this, and I honestly think that it's it is dated, but I still think it's such a wonderful book. I can't say a bad thing about it.
Mm. Now, we do have to stress that we didn't do the entire Green Lantern, Green Arrow, because it is a lot of issues.
It's huge. It's huge.
We did what would be in the 83 release, the collections up to Volume 3. So, basically, the entire run of them doing their trek across America.
Yeah.
And that's what we were really looking at, which, of course, culminates. We should finish it by saying that it does come to a conclusion with basically the Guardian being recalled back to Oa because he makes a very human decision.
Yes.
And his very human decision is Lantern gets injured and he, at weakened power as well because he's in a mortal form, basically has a choice where he can either help this boat not blow up, which is what Arrow is doing, or he can save Green Lantern by getting him to help. And he chooses to save Green Lantern, which immediately gets him brought back to Oa and them saying that, you know, the choice of saving one man is not the way it should be. You always save, you know, the more. What is it that Spock says? The many outweigh the needs of one.
The many outweigh the needs of the one or the few.
Yeah, exactly. And so he's basically brought up on trial. Now, this brings us to our last ethical or moral story, because these are all, each issue is almost like a little moral story wrapped up in itself, a little ethical issue. And it takes us to their Guardian's original home planet. Which is now,
you're right. They're like after school specials.
They're exactly like afternoon specials. And the Guardian's home planet has got its own problem now, which is that while they've been away and they haven't been watching that planet anymore, it's now gotten so overpopulated it can't survive.
Mm.
And so it's all about them trying to figure out how to solve the population issue on this planet, which is in itself an interesting idea because it touches on the idea of in the 1972-73, which would have been a very controversial subject, because I actually vaguely remember it, which was things like test tube babies.
Yes, absolutely.
And so it goes into artificial insemination and test tube babies and, you know, and not being able to feed a planet's population and so forth. So each issue is actually very interesting in the sense that it does kind of tack on or take on an issue. So
it's funny, the clip that I played at the top of the show from Gulliver's Gigantic Goof had a solution to the world's population problem. The evil Dr. Gulliver decided to shrink everybody down on the planet to 2 inches high so there would be more resources for everybody available.
Well, that makes sense.
Which would be taking up less space. I actually thought it was a pretty good plan.
I think so.
Because we all still could go about our daily lives. We'd just have more stuff.
We just have to rebuild because everything's too big for us now.
Yeah, that's true, but it's like there'd still be super powered beings. They'd just be smaller, so that could help out.
And they'd be proportionate to the size of everybody else. So they would be half the size and their powers would be halved, but that's okay because they're now everybody is that size, so therefore their powers are what they were.
Exactly right.
There you go. So I think.
So I actually thought it was a problem that I didn't think the Justice League needed to stop. I thought, no, actually, he solved the world's hunger problems like that.
I gotta see this. Is this on YouTube or something?
Hey, look, I don't know whether it's legally on YouTube, but it is on YouTube. It's not one that's been released commercially. So it's called, if you just look for Gulliver's Gigantic Goof.
Right.
We'll put a link in our show notes to where I took the clip from, which is from YouTube. Yep. And they've got it in a four-part thing on YouTube there. Because it was a Super Friends episode, basically.
We have to have a look at that. We'll have to watch the whole thing. I used to get up every day, every Saturday when I was a kid to watch Super Friends. Can I tell you that?
The Super Friends were the world's four most powerful people. Superman, Wonder Woman, Batman. I wouldn't know if you say he's powerful, but he was up there. Yeah. And Aquaman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was awesome. It was the original.
And then there were the twins and their dog.
Yes. Wonder Twins active. The powers activate. Shape of a bucket of water. I still love Super Friends. And it had Casey Kasem doing the voice of Robin.
That's right.
Yep. Before he ever did his
Batman.
Before he ever did his top 40. So there you go.
That's right. But not this Robin.
Visions of sugar plums were dancing in my head.
That's my favorite. I love it. Richard, we are out of time. All right, I'm going to let's throw down some final recommendations on this pick for this week. You obviously love it, so I don't need to go any further than that. I'm going to
say. Can I just say, though, if you're wanting to get into Green Arrow, I would check out this. I would check out a book called The Longbow Hunters, which you should check out. It's a much later one. And you should also check out Kevin Smith's run, Quiver.
Yeah, I still have to read that. I haven't read that one yet. And I really want to read it because I like Kevin Smith's writing a lot. So, you know, I do. So, I will check that out. I'm going to say that in historical context, this book is really, really important. I think it actually had some amazing stuff to say. Just be aware that it is a little dated in its writing. And so be prepared for that. But it is worth the read.
Exactly right.
Because it is, you have to take it within context of when it was written. And for when it was written, it was incredibly bold.
It's like watching an old movie, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And just be prepared for the fact that, you know, it's the Bird Dame. Anyway. All right. Okay, we should get out of here. What's next week's pick?
Next week's pick, we're actually going to go super modern. We're going to look at the stuff that we're talking about at the start of the show. We're going to look at the current Marvel run of their rebooted ones. We're going to look primarily, I think, at the new Daredevil run by Mark Waid.
I believe we're doing issues 1 through 6.
Daredevil. Because as you said, there's a natural story arc there.
So absolutely.
We're up to issue 8 at the moment, but the first 6 issues form a natural story arc. We'll probably touch a little bit on Avenging Spider-Man and Punisher and a few other new books as well. Because they all kind of funnel into each other.
That's right. I was about to say, we're not stopping on just Daredevil's issues 1 to 6. Oh, no. we're going to have a look at a few of these reboots. So we're going to be 1 to 6 is our primary pick, but we are going to do the first, I think it's the first 3 of Avenging Spider-Man.
That's right.
And I think I haven't actually read them yet. So we're going to do some of the Punishers, but I haven't read them yet. So I don't know what the story arc is for what that is, but I would say safely say probably the first 4 or 5 issues of Punisher. Because this will actually take us up to date, heading towards this convergent crossover that they're talking about.
Which is the Omega wave, I think it's called.
Right, which they touch on in Daredevil.
Yeah, there's a flash drive that's heading around that everyone's desperate to get their hands on. That's what
right.
this is about.
And we do get to that within the first 6 issues of Daredevil. So it's going to be a very interesting discussion because I think for somebody who is so DC-centric with you, I think we may have just won you over to our side.
Well, look, you know, I used to read a lot of Marvel, and actually I think the beautiful thing about the writing of these new ones, which we'll talk about next week, is that it's like slipping on an old glove, you know, or an old shoe. It's just, it felt right, it felt comfortable, and it felt like the characters that I'd left, and I could so easily pick them up.
Yeah. No, I agree. And he isn't quite as fetishistic, is that the word I'm looking for?
Fetishistic, about his
Billy Club. I mean, he is and isn't at the same time. So, but yeah, no, that's very good. All right, Richard, where can people find out more about you on the internet?
They can find out more about me on I've forgotten where I'm from. They can find out more about me on therealbits.com. That's therelbits.com. You can also find me on Twitter at DVDBits, which I'm not on, strangely, at the moment.
Oh, wow. That's very unusual.
I've not been on Twitter for the last hour.
And you can find out more about me by going to geekactually.com, which is where we post this show as well, its homepage. And you can also find me on Twitter at David McVeigh. Now, I think we're also going to give, we keep doing it for him, but we're going to give Nicholas a chance to plug his own site. So, Nicholas, where can we find more of you on the internet?
YouTube.com/Nicky McVeigh.
There we go.
Everyone, try and get Smile to 1,000 views.
Yeah, that'll be good. That'll be good.
It's well on its way.
I think so. All right, we are going to finish the show slightly differently this week, Richard, because we should also point out we 3 weeks in a row we haven't done this. If you want to send feedback to this show, we do have an email address. we keep forgetting to put it up, which is comics@geekactually.com. That's right, isn't it, Richard?
I think so.
It's been so long since I mentioned it. I forgot. I think it's comics@geekactually.com. We also have a voicemail line where you can leave us a message, 02-801-13167. That's a Sydney number. And our Skype ID is geekactually, all one word, if you want to not have to dial a phone like an old-fashioned thing, you know? All right, that's it. We are done.
Oh, and check out our Facebook page. Just search for Behind the Panels on Facebook or facebook.com/behindthepanels.
Well done. I completely forgot about it.
You can also leave feedback there and check out our upcoming episode list.
Yes, and you've been hard at work on that upcoming episode list. And you can also find that at The Real Bits.
The Real Bits, yep.
So that's fantastic as well. Now, as I was saying, we're finishing the show slightly differently. Normally we go out. The music we have been selecting is based on the character of our pick of the week. But this week, we're going to go out because we actually have a piece of Andrew Gerlicher's music from Smile. So I think we're going to go out with this because it's a wonderful piece of music and he is such a great composer. So yeah, do look up his stuff. I believe he's actually put up a Smile demo reel actually himself. So he's very proud of his music as well. So we're going to go out with this. Richard, we'll see you next week.
See you then, David.
Love the show, as always, and we'll see you all next week. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye.